I guess so. All right. So last time we saw, we derived the power radiated from a dipole has this angular distribution if it is a real dipole moment within an overall phase factor. You can use this formula. We didn't derive the more general formula, or at least we didn't simplify it. And then you can integrate over that also if you have a real dipole within a phase factor to get the total power radiated over all solid angles. That's for an electric dipole radiator. And of course, in a general radiating system can have other multiple moments as well, and we'll talk about some of those today. But one thing that I want to work out now is one of the topics in our favorite tome. Take a linear antenna, center fed, and actually solve for, which it'll be, of course, driven by an AC power supply. Some frequency, pick your favorite radio station or in possibly the megahertz range. And we're going to consider a limit, which simplifies the math somewhat, where the size of the antenna is much less than the wavelength of the radiation that's going to come out. So let's set up the system. We have an AC power supply. Going to drive two metal conductors. Looking something like that. And there's a tiny gap between these. We'll set up a coordinate system where the center is the point, source point z prime equals 0. The top is z prime is d over 2. The bottom z prime is minus d over 2. And of course, this will be our source, and then we'll have coming from our origin, we'll be interested in a vector x to an observation point where we might imagine having some detector of radiation. Now, when I first saw this kind of a figure, I was a little puzzled because it's not a closed circuit. And but then I realized, well, okay, it's kind of like a capacitor, right? You've hooked up in your AC supply. You've got two conductors with a gap between them. So you can sort of think of that as driving a capacitor in a sense. So you will be able to drive currents flowing up and down, oscillating back and forth. We'll characterize that mathematically in a second. Even though it's not a closed circuit loop. Okay, so here are our assumptions for the following derivation. We're still going to stick with harmonic sources and fields. So basically, everything has this time dependence that we'll calculate. The less obvious assumption is about the nature of the instantaneous current. what is it like in this antenna? Basically, we're going to assume that it goes to zero linearly at the ends of those rods. And it's in the same direction in each rod. In each half, I should say. So that means that we're going to have a current as a function of z from minus d over 2 to d over 2, whose spatial dependence we're going to model as something like this linear function, 1 minus twice absolute value of z over d, with a harmonic time dependence. So in terms of why it should be the same current in both rods, you can think that at some instant of time, maybe this electrode is positive, this one is negative, so this would be pushing positive charges up, this would be sucking positive charges up. That's how I think of why it makes sense for the current to be the same in both rods. Okay. So if we're going to do Maxwell equations, which we like to do, it's useful to express this as a current density. And we'll take the spatial part of the current density to be a delta function in x and y coordinates. So it's these, that means infinitely thin rod. And then with this current density, minus twice absolute z over d, unit vector in the z hat direction. And of course, that's only for absolute z less than d over 2, less than or equal. So we're going to use some identities. One we derived last time, which helps to make it a little clearer why we can think of this as an electric dipole, this identity, that the electric dipole moment that we're used to thinking of is the integral of x times rho of x, or maybe I should call it prime coordinates, d cubed x prime. And recall this identity that we could also express this as minus 1 over I omega integral d cubed x prime of j of x prime. And again, for harmonic sources, right, rho is 1 over I omega divergence of j, just from the continuity equation. So, let's do the math. It's kind of useful to write the charge density as a charge per unit length. I call rho tilde, or I could call it d rho dz or something. I'll call it rho tilde. Integrating over these trivial x and y extensions to get rid of the delta functions. And so that's simply plus or minus 2i over omega d I naught. In both of these regions. All right, that'll be constant. Sorry, I didn't mean an integral sign. Okay, right, that's for 0 less than z less than d over 2, or for minus d over 2 less than z less than 0. So let's go ahead and calculate our electric dipole moment. The time independent part of it, which will be a unit vector in the z hat direction, of course. Integral from minus d over 2 to 0 dz prime of z prime minus 2i I naught over omega d. For the lower half contribution, and then the upper half contribution will be z hat integral 0 to d over 2 dz prime z prime 2i I naught over omega d. These are trivial integrals to evaluate. I guess I can erase that. And they give the result, finally, that the electric dipole moment vector is z hat times I naught d over 2 omega for our simple model of a center-fed linear antenna. And our coordinate system, of course, we're going to have and some angle theta relative to the z-axis of our detector, and it's going to subtend some solid angle d omega. Well, we already derived, and I already wrote and have erased the differential power, radiated power from an electric dipole. We can just plug this in. This is real within a phase factor. The I is irrelevant. We can still use the formula for a real dipole as long as the imaginary or complex part of it is entirely in a phase factor. So that formula that I erased was c squared z naught over 32 pi squared for the power radiated per unit solid angle. There is a k to the fourth, a sine squared theta, and then the magnitude of p squared. And so if we plug in p, we have k squared c squared I naught, impedance of free space squared z naught squared kd squared sine squared theta over 32 pi squared 4 omega squared. And, well, we can cancel the k squared c squared over omega squared. And just as a reminder, z naught is root mu naught over epsilon naught, impedance of free space. So the final simplest formula is dp d omega I naught squared z naught k d squared sine squared theta And there's a factor to keep track of, 128 pi squared. And that's the key result of this derivation. So the radiation will be strong in this region out here toward pi over 2. It'll vanish along the axes. And that's how much for a given current it's going to send out into the universe. I should also write the total power radiated by integrating over this integral sine theta d theta times d phi over all steradians, all 4 pi steradians. I'll just write the result of this trivial integral between 8 pi squared kd squared. Wrong formula. I squared kd squared over, 48 pi. Okay. So this power, just a few comments about it. The power is proportional to the square of the frequency. Good morning. And it is also proportional to the size of the radiating antenna divided by the wavelength squared. Again, that holds for in this limit where lambda is much greater than d. So one thing I find interesting about this is that you've got this AC circuit connected to this antenna, which is kind of a weird capacitor in a sense, that you can view this whole system, AC source, antenna, and photons coming out, you can view that as just a circuit element, this antenna. And it's causing power to be drawn from the AC supply, even if there is like no resistance in the wires and stuff. So this is interesting to me, that you can view the antenna when it's operating as an AC circuit element. And that element has ohmic losses. It's draining power to send out these photons that are carrying away energy, of course. So we can view it as an effective resistance, this sending out of photons into the universe. And we can calculate it by, we can equate the power radiated, the total power radiated, to the time average we would expect in an AC circuit, 1/2 current squared and some resistance, we'll call the radiative resistance or radiation resistance. And so in this case, we can read off what the radiation resistance is from our derivation. namely the impedance of free space times kd squared over 24 pi. And if you put in the numbers, this works out to be like 5 times kd squared ohms. If the antenna and the holster is a perfect conductor. I think that's kind of cool. The photons are just a resistor here. Okay, so we all know electric dipole radiation, our favorite states of atoms, like the 2p state of hydrogen radiating to the 1s state of hydrogen. This is electric dipole radiation. There are other types of radiation. There is the hyperfine transition from the 1s, f equals 0 from the f equals 1 hyperfine state to the f equals 0 hyperfine state of a hydrogen atom. This is magnetic dipole radiation. Right, these two states have the same parity. They're both attached to the 1s spatial part of a hydrogen wave function, hydrogen atom wave function, even parity state. So it has no electric dipole moment. That would only connect, electric dipole only connects opposite parity states, which you all learned in your quantum classes. And there's another type of radiation. If you take a state like of calcium, 3D, 4S, singlet D, J equals 2, and wonder how does that radiate to the 4S, singlet S, J equals 0 state. This radiation, we know by the Wigner-Eckhart theorem, could not connect a J equals 2 to a J equals 0 state by an electric dipole transition. We know that from the Wigner-Eckhart theorem. But it could connect through a quadrupole, which is a second rank operator. So electric dipole is a first rank vector. Magnetic dipole is a first rank vector, but of even parity. And electric quadrupole is a second rank even parity. So I want to show how these arise in the classical E&M now, these alternatives to electric dipole radiation. Have some of you ever heard of the Wigner-Eckhart theorem? I see some nods. Are you all five of you taking the course? Are you all in quantum 2 now? He hasn't done the Wigner-Eckhart yet. That's so sad. I hope he will. Oh, okay. Well, you got some Wigner at least. He used to come down and visit LSU every winter when I started out there on the faculty. He was an interesting guy to talk to. Yeah, the bright guy. I would tell him some of the things I found amazing in atomic physics. He would be astonished, just like the frame transformation theory. Wow, that's incredible. And then the next year, I'd have the exact same conversation with him. And he would give the exact same response. Never heard of it. Okay, so what we're going to do is look from our general formulas of radiating systems, just good old Maxwell equations, and pull out of those formulas the magnetic dipole and the electric quadrupole. You're not going to like this. A lot of identities. But that's Jackson. So there was an equation we wrote earlier using our Green's function for the wave equation, or I should say for the Helmholtz equation, because we're talking about still monochromatic waves, that this equation 9.11 was a sum over all L's. We're just going to look at the L equals 1 term. Turns out this term contains both of the physics of both the electric quadrupole and the magnetic dipole, which tend to be, if they're both present in a system, they're often comparable magnitude. So let's write what that equation was, and this was mu naught ik. It was a sum over all L and M of a Hankel function of order L, the outgoing wave Hankel function, which is HL of 1, which represents outgoing spherical waves. Then there was YLM of X hat. These are at an observation coordinate. And we have to integrate over J for the source. Which will have the regular spherical Bessel function, the one that's regular at the origin, times the conjugate YLM star of X hat prime of theta prime, phi prime, if you like, D cubed X prime. So if you remember in the Green's function, we had an R lesser and an R greater. Here I've just gone ahead and said, well, we have a source, and that's going to be all the X prime coordinates integrated over, and we are interested in very far away. So the X greater will all be the unprimed, and the R lesser will be the source coordinates, the R prime. Okay, so we're just going to take L equals 1. So let's just do this. We still have to sum over M. And my claim is this will have both the magnetic dipole and the electric quadrupole. But it's important in many applications, nuclear physics, you're going to want to know which one you're talking about. You don't want to just usually plug this in and calculate everything for L equals 1. You want to know each separately. So first thing we need is the actual form of our Hankel functions, which you can look up or type into Mathematica, find these spherical Hankel functions. H1, outgoing wave Hankel function, is minus e to the ikr over kr 1 plus I over kr, and j1 of kr, actually we are going to be again kind of in the long wavelength limit compared to the size of the radiating system. So I'll just write out, instead of the full form of J1, which has sines and cosines, is a bit too complicated, I'll just go to the limit KR much less than 1. And then J1 is just kr over 3, plus the next term is of order kr cubed, which I won't bother to write out. It will be negligible in the range I'm interested in tackling here. So, some more math to remind you. Sum over m of ylm of an observation direction, could call it n hat, times ylm conjugate of a source direction, x hat prime. We can use the spherical harmonic addition theorem. Rewrite that as 2L plus 1 over 4 pi PL of n hat dot x hat prime, which you all know and love this formula from last semester. Well, that P for L equals 1 is especially simple. So that's going to be 3 over 4 pi, simply the dot product of n hat and the vector x hat prime. So let's plug all that in and get a little simpler form for our integral. I hope that's not our building on fire. Probably not. Here's our spatial part of the vector potential. Minus 3 mu naught over 4 pi ik e to the ik r over kr 1 plus I over kr, and now that's just going to multiply an integral d cubed x prime j of x prime kr prime over 3 from our spherical j1 at small distance n hat dot x hat prime. N hat, of course, being a constant for a given observation direction, a constant for within the integral. Well, this can be rewritten in a slightly simpler form, u naught over 4 pi e to the ikr over r. And then there's the 1 over r minus ik. And then our integral can be written in slightly different form as j of x prime n hat dotted now into the full vector x, combining the r prime and the x hat prime into the full vector x. Okay, so this is the formula we're going to tackle with a slew of unbearable identities and break it down into two pieces that have the magnetic dipole and electric quadrupole separately. So, to start with, electric properties are often most clearly written in terms of rho, if you remember back in chapter 4, where we introduced electric quadrupole as an integral over things like x times y times rho of x vector as different components of the quadrupole moment tensor. So our concept of what's going to happen now with a bunch of identities is to use continuity equation to replace J by rho. in these integrals. But there is a caveat to that trick, which is that should remember that any vector field such as J can be written as a sum of a transverse field and a longitudinal field. So there is a transverse part of a vector field, I'll call JT, and a longitudinal part, JL. And these two parts, these two different parts that you can break any vector field into, and now we're talking about J, have the property that the longitudinal part has no curl. And the transverse part has no divergence. And there's a discussion of this. If you want to be reminded of it, see page 241 to page 242 of our favorite tome. So, what's the implication of that for our upcoming derivation? Is that we can't get everything we want by implementing this identity, which only involves the divergence part of J. So basically, using this identity, this works only for the longitudinal part. And it won't tell us anything about the transverse part. So we'll have to treat JT explicitly. And that'll turn out to be the magnetic dipole part is going to come from JT. All right, so I'm really sorry, but I've got to go through these identities. Okay, here's one. Let's start. Let's consider n hat cross x vector prime crossed into J. Do the back cab. That's x prime n hat dot J. Minus J n hat dot x prime. I think I need new chalk. And I can solve that for n hat dot x prime J. And maybe I'll skip one step of algebra. I could write the equation for J n hat dot x prime, and then to that equation I'm going to add J hat n hat dot x prime to both sides, and that gives this equation 2 n hat dot x prime times J is equal to x prime n hat dot J plus n hat dot x prime J minus this double cross product we started with, n hat cross x prime cross J. So I can divide that factor of 2 out and get a useful equation, n hat dot x prime times j, which you see is the integral here we care about. This dividing by 2 gives a half times n hat dot x prime j plus x prime n hat dot j minus a half, and that cross product, double cross product, n hat cross x prime cross j. Okay, so now it may not be leaping out at you, but there's an interesting qualitative difference in the symmetry properties of these two lines. This term on top is symmetric if you interchange x prime and j vectors. You can just see by inspection. On the other hand, this term is anti-symmetric under that change. And it'll turn out the first one will give us our electric quadrupole information, and the second one will give us our magnetic dipole information. So we'll consider those separately. No one's objecting. You like these identities. Okay, first term, sometimes it's called the E2, this electric quadrupole. So now I want to do something else. Recall another identity we've already proved. For the integral d cubed x prime of j of x prime, I'm going to just consider the ith component of that integral. And the identity we proved, I think maybe I proved it again last lecture, is can be written as minus c integral d cubed x prime, the ith component of the vector x prime, times the divergence of j of x prime, which is a scalar, of course. And I want to repeat that derivation I'm going to replace ji by the quantity n hat dot x prime ji, and basically go through the exact same steps. Then the way that works is the integral d cubed x prime, n hat dot x prime, ji of x prime is equal to minus d cubed x prime integral xi prime, the prime divergence of this quantity n hat dot x prime, times j of x prime, which I can break up into two integrals because I have a divergence of a scalar times a vector. cubed x prime xi prime times the primed gradient of n hat dot x prime, prime gradient of the scalar part, dotted into j, plus n hat dot x prime times the divergence, the prime divergence of j of x prime. Now, what is this this term here, del prime n hat dot x prime dot into j? Well, del prime of n hat dot x prime dot j. Let's write out actually just what this gradient is. That can be written as n hat dot del prime acting on the vector x prime. Right, because you have a primed gradient and there's two terms here. And of course, n hat is constant with respect to the prime coordinates. So there's only one term. What is that? That is x unit vector in the x direction times n hat dotted into the x prime component unit vector plus y hat prime times n hat dot y hat prime plus z hat prime n hat dot z hat, which is actually simply the n hat vector, n hat unit vector, pointing to the observer from our coordinate origin. So, our integral we care about, t cubed x prime of n hat dot x prime j of x prime is minus integral d cubed x prime of the vector x prime now times this quantity n hat dot j plus n hat dot x prime times the prime divergence of j, which we will replace by I omega rho. And so that the final key identity kind of result of that, those manipulations, is this equation that the d cubed x prime integral of n hat dot x prime j plus x prime n hat dot j can in fact be written in terms of the charge density rho, which we want in order to be able to use our ideas about an electric quadrupole, minus I omega integral d cubed x prime of x prime n hat dot x prime times rho of x prime. So we're going to plug that in to our equation for A now, the L equals 1 part of A in our multiple expansion. And we'll get both terms end up with an observation coordinate R dependence, which is the same. So I'll write as an overall leading factor, mu naught over 4 pi, e to the ik r over r, minus ik 1 plus I over kr. And now that'll multiply two integrals, the first of which is the one we use these identities for, minus I omega 2 integral d cubed x prime n hat dot x prime rho of x prime, the quadrupole part, and then we still have the part we haven't tackled with any further identities, n hat cross the integral of x prime cross j over 2 d cubed x prime. Okay, so this first line is our electric quadrupole or E2 part. The second line you should recognize if you remember your chapter 5 formulas, magnetic dipole, this integral. It's the magnetic dipole moment of a current distribution. You remember. Okay, so let's tackle the details of each one separately. Let's focus first on the magnetic dipole. We can simplify this introducing little m, which is a magnetic dipole moment, the time-independent part of the oscillating monochromatic magnetic dipole is this 1/2 integral x prime cross j cubed x prime. And with that notation, A for the magnetic dipole is mu naught over 4 pi ik e to the ikr over r, outgoing spherical wave I over kr, and that crossed into this constant dipole moment. And in the radiation zone, where we are usually most interested, I over kr is much less than 1. We can use the earlier formulas we derived for H and E in terms of the vector potential. H for the magnetic dipole, this 1 over mu naught, the curl of A for the magnetic dipole vector potential. And that is simply k squared over 4 pi n hat cross m quantity crossed n hat, and then e to the ikr over r. And the electric field we'll need also to calculate the power radiated. The electric part of the magnetic dipole radiation will be Z naught H M1 crossed into N hat is minus Z naught K squared over 4 pi n hat cross m, and the outgoing spherical wave e to the ikr over r. Those are the key formulas of magnetic dipole radiation. And there is an interesting exact parallel between electric dipole radiation properties and magnetic dipole radiation properties, which I summarized in a table in the notes. It's such a beautiful table, I guess I'll reproduce it on the board. It's the kind of table that you look at and you want to smile. So, E1, M1. We have H for E1. Looks like we derived earlier C k squared over 4 pi n hat cross P e to the ikr over r. And what we just derived for M1 is, looks different, k squared over 4 pi n hat cross m crossed n hat e to the ikr over r. Okay, I'm not smiling yet. Let's look at E. E for an electric dipole radiator is C Z naught K squared over 4 pi N hat cross P crossed N hat E to the IKR over R. And E for the magnetic dipole is minus Z naught K squared over 4 pi N hat cross M E to the IKR over R. Okay, now we can sort of smile because the electric field produced by an electric dipole is exactly the same as the magnetic field produced by a magnetic dipole. These are the same structure. All you have to do to go from one to the other is replace C times P by M, and you convert those. And the same thing works, oh, there's a minus sign, except for the minus sign, works for the magnetic field due to the electric dipole and the magnetic field of the electric dipole and the electric field of the magnetic dipole. Assuming I didn't forget a sign along the way. We're also interested in the differential power radiated. We can write for both C squared Z naught for the electric dipole, K to the fourth over 32 pi squared, the magnitude of this tricky vector N hat cross P crossed N hat squared. And for the magnetic dipole, we have Z naught K to the fourth 32 pi squared n hat cross m crossed n hat squared. Okay, so there's the parallel between the E1 and M1. They're connected by CP going to M, and of course E going to H. And H going to E. Maybe it's E going to minus H. Okay, so that's everything I wanted to say about magnetic dipole part. How are we doing? Yeah, we still have time. Let's now do the electric quadrupole part, which is a little bit, has some trickier aspects because it involves a tensor instead of just a vector radiating. So as we derived, the vector potential associated with the electric quadrupole part of a radiating system is mu naught over 4 pi ck squared e to the ikr over r. We still have our outgoing spherical wave. And its directionality is in n hat inside this integral. We've got x prime n hat dotted to x prime rho of x prime d cubed x prime. And I've neglected terms of order r to the minus 2 that won't carry power and energy off to infinity and will not be important in the radiation zone. So I will not write those. This can in turn be, we can calculate our fields, H for the electric quadrupole, 1 over mu naught. I'll use this trick of taking ik n hat cross ae2 when I'm taking the curl, because basically, if you remember, when I do the curl, the derivatives, there will be a radial derivative that would act on this, on the exponential, which would just pull down an ik. It won't bring a 1 over r. All the angular derivatives have an extra 1 over r in them, and the derivative of the 1 over r would turn that into 1 over r squared. So only the derivatives, the radial derivatives acting on e to the ikr, are going to survive in the radiation zone to the leading order. So I'm replacing the curl by this trick that you can often use when you're working on quantities that are going to be evaluated in the radiation zone. Replace the curl as just ik n hat crossed. Okay, so there will be correction terms to that logic of order 1 over r squared that we don't have any interest in usually. Although if you're in the near zone, you might have to worry about it. Okay, so this is not so hard. Minus I ck cubed over 8 pi e to the ikr over r. And now this interesting integral, which has a cross product n hat cross x prime and a dot product n hat dot x prime rho of x prime d cubed x prime. And again, n hat inside that integral, they're constants. That's the observation direction. It's not changing as I change x prime over the volume of the radiator. So let's write this, recast this in terms of the quadrupole moment tensor. alpha, beta. This we define back in chapter 4 in the Cartesian coordinates. The Cartesian tensor is 3x alpha prime x beta prime minus r, should say r prime squared. I just called it r squared in the notes. You might correct your notes on that. R prime squared delta alpha beta rho of x prime d cubed x prime. So that this integral we care about, rho x prime dot n hat, d cubed x prime, can be written as 1/3 of this tensor, it's all right with a double arrow, dotted into n hat, the observation direction, plus 1/3 the integral of rho r prime squared d cubed x prime times the identity, 3x3 identity matrix in Cartesian coordinates dotted into n hat. And this, of course, is just another way of writing n hat, the identity dotted into n hat. Basically, we're saying sum over j of delta ij nj, that's just equal to n, the ith component of the unit vector n. Okay, so n hat cross the integral of rho x prime times x prime dot n hat, which is what we have here, except I just factored out this n hat cross product outside the integral. This integral is simply 1/3 n hat cross quadrupole tensor dotted into n hat. And so finally, this will allow us to calculate h for the electric quadrupole at the observation in the far zone as minus I ck cubed over 24 pi e to the ikr over r, still there, n hat crossed into q tensor dotted into n hat. This is the notation I prefer. Jackson has introduced a slightly different and calls this thing I boxed, he calls that the vector q vector of n hat. So that's the magnetic field, and now the electric field, E sub E2, is Z naught n hat cross H E2, and that when we take it, it's minus I Z naught CK cubed over 24 pi e to the ikr over r, and this thing that has all the information about how the angles, the fields change with angle as you move your detector on different observation points, this weird vector n hat crossed into the quadrupole tensor dotted into n hat. Remember, a tensor dotted into a vector is a vector. And then that crossed n hat again. Okay. And the power radiated, which is one of the things we're most interested in per unit solid angle. Like if you have a transition and you are going to measure it for an atom or a nucleus sending out photons, you think you know its quadrupole moment. You want to know where are those photons going. You'll want to know these formulas. dp d omega from the Poynting vector, time averaged, of course, will be c squared z naught over 1152 pi squared k to the sixth, the absolute value of n hat cross q dotted into n hat crossed n hat again. Rather complicated, these multiple cross and dot products. But there it is. I have a whole page of identities using, what do we call those? Levi-Civita symbols. I'm not going to go through that, though. It's in the notes. You can read it in your vast spare time. But there is another way to break this down into n hat crossed into q dot n hat squared. Which is n hat dot q dagger q dotted into n hat minus the magnitude of n hat dot q dot n hat squared. That allows me to write, finally, the integrated power more simply, integral dp d omega times d omega as c squared z naught k to the sixth over 1440 pi sum over both alpha and beta magnitude of q alpha beta squared. One thing that's, I think, interesting is that I guess I didn't write dp d omega for the dipole, did I? For magnetic dipole. Well, maybe I did earlier on the table. Yeah, for the dipole radiation, we had a k to the fourth, which is omega over c to the fourth. Here we have an omega to the sixth. So there's this huge suppression of quadrupole radiation by this factor, omega over c squared, compared to dipole radiation. Although magnetic dipole radiation, you probably remember all magnetic effects are kind of suppressed by 1 over c. And although that's easier to see in Gaussian units in the formulas. So it turns out both magnetic dipole and electric quadrupole, they're often comparable in order and usually much less than electric dipole radiation, if electric dipole radiation is allowed. Okay, so I'm out of time, but I'll just tell you as a preview what we'll do next time. We'll take an example of a radiating quadrupole, which will have like twice the charge in the middle, and then a system like this, where we allow those to all radiate monochromatically. This is a system that has no dipole moment and it has no monopole moment. So its lowest moment is a electric quadrupole moment. And we'll look at its angular distribution of radiated power, just because we can. The payoff for all our identities. Okay, see you Monday or in office hours. I might be late to office hours on Friday.